Welcome to the Airport Lounge. I'm your host, Airport. This podcast is aimed at providing deeper insights into all things Web3, including the stories of prominent figures, builders, and community members generally operating in this space. My guest today is MXU. MXU wears many hats, being a serial startup founder, CTO, music producer, and early crypto investor and aficionado, all whilst also being a family man. MXU is responsible for the beat you're listening to right now. We've been friends for a while, and he graciously offered to help me put together an original track for the podcast back when I was first thinking of launching it. We connected through Azuki, and MXU reached out to me to do this episode because he was excited about Azuki's new physical-backed token and wanted to chat about it. He couldn't have picked a better time, as it's something that was on my mind as well and something I wanted to understand better. And as you'll hear in this episode, with MXU's knowledge of tech and the blockchain, he does a really great job of explaining why Azuki's tech is a game-changer and how we might see it applied going forward. As always, nothing in this podcast should be construed as financial advice. Please always do your own research fully before deciding to make any investments. And before we get into the podcast, I want to also take a moment to thank the sponsor of today's episode, Origins NFT. Origins started out as an alpha group with custom data analytics, but has since transformed into a community of traders and kind of a hub of builders in the Web3 space. Anyone who's followed me on Twitter for some length of time will have seen me post the occasional Origins chart together with some analysis. It's been my home base since I entered the Web3 space, and the team has been busy building out a terminal with even more functionality, more tools, and a better trading experience for everyone in the Web3 space. So, if you're still looking for a community to call home, do check out Origins. Pop into the Discord and ping me or one of the mods in the comments channel if you have any questions. Thank you to Origins for sponsoring this podcast. And without further ado, let's get into today's episode with MXU. Just in case, but... Yeah, dude. All right, we're live. So, yeah, man, I'm looking forward to talking to you today because I think, you know, there's a lot of ground to cover. And I'm excited that you reached out to me because I was actually thinking, I was kind of like, man, I really want to go deep into this PBT stuff because I think it's like, you know, a lot of people have like had some opinions on it. A lot of people have had thoughts and stuff. And, you know, a lot of people are upset too because they're kind of just like, oh, it's just an NFC chip, right? So, you know, I'm excited to get through some of this stuff with you and sort of discuss, you know, the implications of this and where we could see it going. But, you know, before we go into that, you know, why don't you introduce yourself, man, and tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Airport. Much appreciated. Yeah. So my name is MXU. I'm a beat maker, producer. I suppose in real life, my name is Adam. So, you know, you can feel free to call me by either. I have a bit of a cold today, so that's why my voice sounds like Barry White. I've got the golden voice, which is, you know, maybe a filter. Like, maybe that's my next startup idea. So I'm not going to complain. But yeah, a bit of a cold today, so hopefully it'll last. And yeah, I'm sort of a multidisciplinary individual. I think we obviously connected through Web3. I've been involved in crypto since 2011, you know, mining Bitcoin like mad early and all that. Didn't create like some kind of intergenerational wealth or anything, but it was great. I've been following along with crypto the whole time. It's been an incredible ride, you know. And then meanwhile, I've also been making music for, you know, the last like 25 years. Like, music has always been a big part of my life. So I was a DJ turned music producer. You know, more recently, I've got a family now. I'm a family man. I've got a dad. I'm a dad. Got a kid with another one on the way in December. So, you know, with two kids, I'm not like DJing till 4 a.m. anymore. Rather, I'm, you know, at home. And also in a pandemic, I'm at home on my laptop, like making beats and connecting with my like sort of producer friends. So that's a big focus of my life. But otherwise, you know, I spend most of my time focusing on my Web2 ventures. And then, you know, noodling and participating as much as I can in Web3. And I've done that in... You know, we could talk a little more about my past, but I've done that in more formal capacities and otherwise, like, you know, always informal capacities too.
Yeah.
So yeah, a bit about me.
And I want to mention too, because you made the beat for the podcast, which you know is starting to become iconic. You know, people kind of, I've received a lot of DMs, people being like, oh, I can't wait to hear the riff. You know, kind of like it's you know, it's only the podcast with the riff at the beginning. So I love
nice.
It, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, Netflix has the ta-dum, you know, Airport Lounge has the has the Airport Rhythm or whatever you call it, but
The MXU one of one. That's what's up, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was the thing I was thinking of. We talked about this in the past. I was thinking of leaning more into that. I mean, I've got like hundreds of similar type beats, right, that are just chilling on my hard drive and that I listen to, and I want, you know, the world to hear it. And it's kind of hard. Like, the traditional music industry has been sort of an ongoing point of frustration. I'm sure many content creators have found the same thing. It's not like, I don't know, it's not shaped the way that I would hope it to be shaped. And it's cool to see the way the Web3 is letting, you know, like content creators and everything like reshape the way that they would want the content world to exist. So yeah, I thought about dabbling in Web2. Had some ideas actually, like speaking of PBT, I mean, I think like there's opportunity, we can talk about this later, but there's opportunities, like I think for PBT to really influence the music game too. So yeah, lots to chat about.
I'm excited to dive into it. But, you know, so you, if I correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, you know, in terms of your Web2 endeavors and stuff, you know, you founded a startup previously that, if I recall correctly, you sold, and you're working on something different now. I'd love to hear a little bit more about those as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You can jump into it. I mean, basically, I've been, you know, I've been hacking on stuff my whole life, right? So when I was a kid, my dad rolled up one day. He, like, I guess as a kid, like maybe like many people in Web3, I don't know. I tried a lot of things as a kid. Nothing stuck. I wasn't really like a sports guy. I wasn't really this and that. And then one day my dad rolled up and he like threw this big cardboard box down in front of me. And it was an Amiga. And I like tore open the box and I was just like, what is this? Like, what is this thing? And so I, you know, plugged it in and there's like all these like boxes of software and like with discs. I'm like, okay, I can load these and check them out. And then, you know, every other week I'd like break the thing and he'd have to take it back and get them to wipe it. And I'd bring it back to me and I'd like be tinkering and I'd break it and he'd have to go get it wiped again. And then, you know, fast forward, like that was a huge influence on me, right? And then I was always like building lemonade stands and things. Like I think as a musician, with most of my friends being some, you know, type of creative, right? There was always opportunities where I could build like online communities for them or like find ways to use my love for technology, but also like my empathy for music and artists and then create some kind of like platform for them. So I did a couple things. And then fast forward, my first venture where I was actually like the co-founder CTO was called Universe. And it started off as a platform, like a sharing economy platform. This is in 2011, I'd say. And we ended up finding product market fit selling tickets to events, which is great because, you know, I've been like DJ my whole life. And so I've done a ton of events myself. And we ended up creating this ticketing platform, which we ended up blowing up. We were, you know, in like four continents. We had offices around the world, had like lots and lots of awesome people working with us. And then eventually it was acquired by Ticketmaster. We had some cool technology that, you know, they wanted to, I think they probably had a hard time wrapping their minds around, but we had it and it made sense to join through acquisition. And on the flip side, that was like, you know, we got to fast track the scale that we were operating at to Ticketmaster scale, which is huge. And then personally, it was just a really great opportunity for me to keep doing what I do. You know, a lot of the R&D stuff, a lot of the cool experimental technology, and fast forward that to like an insane scale where any day can be Black Friday. And you know, to be a VP there and influential on the technology platform was a lot of fun. So, and I was also for a while, I was the blockchain guy there too. I was like, you know, when smart contracts became a thing, they were like, oh, well, we got to think about this. And Adam, like we should have you look at it. So I was the first person to look at it there and other people looked at it since, but it was cool. I wrote a patent actually. And the patent that I wrote there has a lot of overlaps with the PBT stuff, which is kind of cool too. I think that's why I'm so stoked on it. Cause I understand it deeply having spent time like thinking about it, you know, being involved on that R&D side of things. And then also with Peggy too, like there's certainly a provenance aspect, like that's a huge aspect of what I'm doing already. And so, the PBT thing definitely feeds into that. And I know I've seen, you know, you online, like talking about provenance and things like that. I think one thing I would like people to walk away from this like conversation, it's like to understand that aspect of it and understand aspects of like PBT, which I think are, there's, you know, like there's tailwinds behind this, right? It's not just about PBT, but there's like an underlying drive, I think, across like different sort of pockets, whether it's like, you know, the StockX, like sneakerheads, you know, craving this stuff. And then, or, you know, people who are just like in general, like trading alts, not altcoins, but just like, you know, like alt investments and whatnot. I think there's like elements of people seeking like interesting investment opportunities there. And so I feel like PBT is kind of an interesting like angle on the Web3 side of things, but yeah.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I guess the one, so right before we get into it, because I feel like we're dancing around it a lot, but I want to get full context here as well. Like, you know, the thing that you're working on right now, which you mentioned, Peggy, you know, you've kind of described it as like PBT, but for physical art, you know, including on secondary and stuff. And I really want to like, you know, get into this and understand like, you know, sort of how that all kind of works. And then, you know, we'll dive into all the PBT stuff as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm super excited about Peggy. I think, you know, we like to say like Peggy's the big one, right? But I really feel like we're sort of we're building something that is very, very like a one of one and very timely. And yeah, I'll tell you all about it. So basically, you know, Peggy is a marketplace where you can buy and then sell and resell fine art like paintings, right? And so the thing that's really cool about Peggy is that, you know, it allows people like me and you, you know, ordinary people, like we're not billionaires yet. It allows us to participate in the art market, right? And I think if you think back to like, you know, back in the day, you know, art has been something, it's been around for thousands of years. People have been funding the arts for a long time. But, you know, unless you were a billionaire able to, you know, purchase a Picasso, Basquiat, you know, Warhol, et cetera, there's no liquidity there. Like, I can't take that big purchase, right? That $200,000 purchase minimum. And then, you know, like if you're a billionaire, yeah, you can take that to Sotheby's or Christie's and, you know, you can transact that on a secondary market if you need to. But for the rest of us, if you want to spend, you know, like a good amount of money, like $1,000, $10,000 on a piece of art at an art fair, you know, that's wonderful, but we don't have the same liquidity that others have. And I think when you're lacking liquidity, when you're buying illiquid things, right, your relationship to it kind of changes. Can you imagine, would you buy any NFTs if you had no ability to resell them at OpenSea? Like if there was no transferability and you bought an NFT and it was like in your wallet for life, like it changes the nature that you think about like purchasing those things. But in the case of arts, it's like, you know, it changes the way you might think about like supporting artists by buying their paintings and beautifying your house, right?
That's very true. Yeah. No, that's a good point.
Yeah. And so like, you know, if you don't have the ability to resell, it's like buying a painting is like buying like a tattoo for your house, right? And if you ever like, if tastes ever change, if, you know, you ever want to rehome the art, you can't, right? Until now. So with Peggy, we allow people to, you know, like buy amazing artwork in a certain affordable price bracket. Not necessarily inexpensive, but it's great stuff. And I can tell you why. And yeah. And then if you ever need to rehome it, then, you know, there's other collectors who would love to own that, and then you can rehome it to them. And then a cool thing is we support royalties because we've created this protocol, like a secure protocol for transacting art. We can pay 5% royalties, which actually is interesting because if you think about it, like, you know, there's obviously a lot of talk in the NFT space about royalties,
yeah,
and the marketplaces don't enforce it, right? But the cool thing is with Peggy, you know, we are able to enforce it, and we're able to pay 5% royalties to artists every time. Which is great because that's been a really, really big desire and a very legitimate and valid ask from the artist community around, hey, like, where are my royalties, right? When things go up and to the right, can you break me off a chunk of that, right?
And yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's a thing. And the cool part that enables all of this is a proprietary AI technology that we created. And it's able to, you know, when you use our app and you present the app to a painting, it's able to look at it from a number of different ways. And you spend some time with the app and the painting, and then the app will then, you know, without trivializing the process, it'll tell you, yep, this is the legitimate one. And then with that, we can then, the app will allow you to do escrow through the app, which removes the need for an intermediary. So, you know, StockX, for example, other platforms, you want to transact some sneakers, cool. You can throw the sneakers in the mail and they go through a clearinghouse. They're inspected, right? And then the escrow service provided by an intermediary is what allows you to inspect it, validate it, and then release funds. But when you're dealing with like a 6-foot piece of art, right? Like it's cumbersome. It's expensive to ship, right? This wouldn't work if you had a clearinghouse for art, right? It's just like the physical size is just too large and it's too cumbersome and too delicate. So rather this really requires some kind of peer-to-peer system. And that's where our service can act as that escrow agent, allowing for peer-to-peer transactions, which is cool. So in that way, it's like very much like Web3. I mean, you don't have to sell your token to OpenSea in order for them to then sell it to a buyer, right? Like they provide liquidity, but still allowing it to be a peer-to-peer marketplace. And so Peggy is like that for paintings. So people often think of us like the OpenSea for paintings.
No, I get that. It's basically just market making, right? And I think, you know, the benefit of, and this kind of highlights, I think, one of the things that is a benefit of actually, you know, centralizing something, you know, and I think a lot of people think that, you know, in this space kind of take the Kool-Aid or get red pilled or whatever. And it's kind of just have this idea that like all centralization is bad, but you know, that's a perfectly good example right there of where it is, you know, really good in the sense that because it's not all done through tech and it's not all sort of decentralized, you can enforce these royalties, right? By virtue of the fact that it's on this app. And that's really good for the artists, right? Which, you know, I feel like we've lost the plot a little bit with that whole thing. And this is maybe a whole separate conversation, you know, on royalties. I think, but you know, part of the allure and one of the main draws of NFTs actually in the first place for me, and I think for many others, is the idea that, you know, royalties are paid to artists on sale, you know?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting, but that's super cool. So yeah, let's talk PBT. And I would like to ask you to, you know, explain, I guess, a couple things. One is, you know, how you understand the technology to work, and two, kind of what you were feeling and what you thought when you initially read the thread that, you know, sort of announced it all, because I'm sure you'd have a much better perspective on it than I, given your sort of tech background. So I'd love to
hear. Yeah, for sure. I mean, hey, full disclosure, I own two Azukis. I finally got my second Azuki, you know.
Let's go, dude.
Yeah. And I took advantage to sell some of my altcoin bags in 2017 and just like scrounged up the liquid to buy one in that little dip a little while ago. So it was great. Mm-hmm. And a couple beans and a Bobu fragment and hoping for the jacket soon. So yeah, sure. Maybe nice. I'm biased. But yeah, the way I would describe the PBT play is PBT, physical backed tokens, are a physical technology. The bean chip is a physical, either NFC or RFID type physical token, which can be, you know, baked into a physical good. It's built into it, presumably by Azuki initially, if they're the ones who are creating the merch. And the chip itself has like the ability to handle like asymmetric encryption. So public and private key encryption, which, you know, is really the basis of crypto. And so what that allows you to do is if we have a public key, private key infrastructure, you can do two things. You can, in the case of PBT, I think it's really about the signatures. So you can sign the payloads and you can also encrypt payloads. But I think the angle with the PBTs, at least initially, is they're using the ability to sign payloads with the chip. And then once you can do that, once you can create signatures, I mean, that's how lots of things like OpenSea Seaport, I mean, a lot of the ways that NFTs transact is using signatures, right? And so having the chip be able to act as a signature provider unlocks a whole bunch of really cool use cases. And so with Azuki, well, they've created the protocol in the same way that they created ERC-721A. Yeah.
Yep.
They've given that back to the community, which I think is brilliant and wonderful. And I love them for that. And then they've also gone and they're creating the chips themselves. And I'm not sure what the plan is, if they're going to be like selling the white labeling the bean chips so that you can also, go and if they're giving that away, maybe they're selling them for cost, maybe not. But it'd be cool if they did that because it would enable, content creators like myself, if I wanted to make a BBT record, right? Like a vinyl record, I could buy like, 1,000 chips or something and weave those in. So we'll see what they do with that. But there is a physical component, which would have to be manufactured, by a centralized entity, I suppose.
Yep.
Chip manufacturer. And then, so basically when I was reading the announcement, I was super stoked because we've heard Zaga talk a long time about how streetwear would be a core focus of Azuki. A lot of us weren't really sure where, like we knew it would be a decentralized, brand for Web3 and that streetwear would be a big part of it, but we didn't really know what that would look like. And so when they dropped the PBT chip, what that tells me is that, the merch, the gear, the streetwear that they might make, presumably will all be lit up for, like it'll all be lit up with PBT chips. And therefore every Twin Tiger jacket will be able to sign messages. And it's not just about, possessing an NFT that flips from blue to red, showing that at one point you bought it. But I would imagine that they will tie that back to the jacket using the chip on the jacket and then use things like what they call scan to own, where scanning the item then can facilitate a transfer. So I think there's going to be a lot of really cool ways. Like, I mean, you get an Azuki lighter from an event or you get some other piece of merch from an IRL event. If that's got the chip on it, then you can do a lot of really cool things like within, the garden with that signature and a lot of fun things, but a lot of useful things as well to the owner. And so to me, that's sort of the like at a 10,000 foot view, that's what I would interpret the vision to be. And I don't think anyone else is taking that angle at the moment. So I'm super excited because I think they've got all the ingredients in play now to create something truly special, truly unique. That's not just like sort of a copycat play of other like, stuff that you see in Web3, but this merch angle along with like, they've got exquisite taste. The Twin Tigers jackets are dope. All the IRL, like, everything's, we know that's, dope SHIT only, right? And now if that can all translate to, having like some Web3 presence to the chip, then I'm pretty stoked.
Yep. No, I totally hear that. So does it differ? Am I correct in understanding that the main difference between sort of the bean chip and the PBT technology, as you understand it, versus let's say just a normal NFC chip that's implanted in like, a piece of merch that, we have seen before in the space. The real big difference is the, signing of signatures that sort of is enabled on PBT.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and that's the super powerful thing. Like once you're dealing with like, public key, private key, asymmetric key encryption, especially one that uses like coding that's blockchain compatible. And so the elliptic curve stuff that they're doing with it. Yeah. It's like, it's a chip and it's not just like, asymmetric encryption, but it's like one that is, forward compatible with blockchains. And yeah, to me, that is like the key difference, which is the game changer with their approach. Now, the way that the PBT protocol works is, they have these like signature-based transfer mechanisms. And so what that allows you to do, and what is actually, I think, different about this play versus the other ones where people have tried to bridge like NFTs to the physical, is that it's the possession of the physical object, you know, where it's like literally in your hands, right? And then you've got probably like an Azuki app, because you've got to have something that's like able to interface with your phone's NFC reader. So they're probably going to make an Azuki app at some point, which, you know, will be dope, of course. That might be like part of your, you know, the gateway into the world, right? And so you'll have the app, and then they'll use like the NFC readers, presumably, to interface with the chip. And then, yeah, the chip will then, you know, allow you to then do what they call them like time-based signatures, which is a great concept. Was a thing that was included in my patent, which is cool, because like when I was dealing with like time-based entry for ticketing, right? Like you need a way to not be able to, you know, foreshadow and forecast all of the nonces, right? And so the block hash is an incredible way to get like a time-based signature that's not predictable. And so, yeah, they've got the ability to then take the signature of the device along with a recent block hash and create like a, you know, like an ephemeral, like an expiring signature that you can then use for some kind of like, you know, on-chain transaction in some amount of time. So yeah, presumably you'll have a Azuki app and you can scan the thing. Maybe it's transferring ownership. Maybe it's lending it. Maybe it's participating in a game or unlocking some kind of challenge, you know, or I don't know, using your jacket to get you on a whitelist or something. Like, who knows, right? Like lots of cool things you can
basically
do.
Anything that could require a signature could be done.
Yeah. Yeah. Presumably. Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's super awesome. I mean, I read this thread by, you know, Seraph on Twitter, and he had written, you know, that as well, that sort of really stood out to me, which is that, you know, PBTs are physical first. You know, what we've seen so far has been, you know, you kind of mint this NFT, and then you can go to a claim website and then drop your details, and then people kind of, you know, send you the thing. And we saw this with jackets too, right? You know, we got airdrop the jacket tokens, and then you kind of redeem the jacket token in your wallet and sort of throw your address in and stuff. You know, but the difference between that and this is, you know, as you mentioned as well, it starts with the physical, right? It's like the truest form of ownership is, you know, having it in your hands. And that's where we're starting from with the PBT.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose there's like two other capabilities too, right? So if you have like asymmetric keys, then, you know, encryption is the other side of it. So, you know, with encryption rather than signing, then you would be able to, presumably your jacket could, you know, encrypt a payload and then decrypt it, like only if you have that exact jacket, which is cool, like a hardware wallet. And maybe a third capability would be the fact of if you have like asymmetric encryption, then parts of that are hashed, and that's how you drive an address. So the chip acts like a wallet in the sense that you could probably airdrop stuff to it, right? You could probably send additional things to it, and then I don't know, maybe you could upgrade the jacket. Like maybe you could upgrade, like you own the jacket. Obviously, it's physical. You're wearing it, right? You can't change it. But if let's say if you're wearing it in the garden, and if there's ways of airdropping like additional things, or you know, combining things to it, or like sending metadata to that address, then who knows, maybe the jacket or the object could appear differently like in the garden when associated to your character. So the fact that it's an address means you could probably transfer stuff to it, and then like who knows what could happen there.
That's insane. I'm not gonna lie, this is getting over my head. This is super, you know, insane but interesting. But okay, so that's interesting. So, I mean, I guess getting into use cases, because I think, you know, even if we understand hypothetically sort of, you know, what is possible, I guess, what do you see as being the most obvious use cases that sort of come out? Because, you know, I think we've seen Z and the Azuki team sort of talk about, you know, storytelling and sort of being able to weave narrative into, you know, these physical objects and stuff. And I find that quite interesting, because I think I have an image in my head of how that might look. But it's sort of, you know, conceptualizing actual use cases is a bit different. And I'm curious what your thoughts are, because obviously, you know, you've already started thinking about ways that you could incorporate it with the creative endeavors that you sort of.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what do we know? We know that the nine skateboards have PBT in them, right? And then those have owners. You know, what could you do with that? Well, obviously, you could prove that you were the current owner of it. You know, you could presumably take that skateboard somewhere. I mean, it's almost like we have like, you know, proof of attendance protocol and things where there's NFTs that are kind of airdropped to you if you go to an event, because presumably you go and then, you know, they look at the, you know, like the guest list of who's there, and they get your address and they drop you something, right? But in the case of PBT, because it's all about the physical object, you could go, you could sign a payload at a particular place. There's probably ways that you could check in, like Foursquare. You could take your skateboard, you know, roll up to an event somewhere, right? And then you could check in like Foursquare. And then now, you know, then maybe you're getting like a, you know, like a Pope, you know, NFT, proof of attendance protocol NFT, showing that your skateboard was somewhere. So maybe there's ways that you could get, you know, badges associated to the item. which is cool because it's less about then the current owner, but you can sort of build up like Cub Scout badges, right? Saying the skateboard has done this and this and this, and that ownership record lives with the skateboard. So depending on what you do with it, you know, that could potentially increase the value of it. You know, it could differentiate one skateboard from another skateboard because it's got this idea of provenance. It's got an auditable trail of things that have happened to the skateboard, right? The skateboard takes on its own life. And if you bring that skateboard now into the garden, who knows how it could be, you know, digitally rendered, right? I mean, what do you put on skateboards? Stickers, right?
Yep.
So it wouldn't surprise me if like, if you had to bring your skateboard to somewhere, you tapped it, and then, you know, online, like in the garden, if you got like a virtual sticker slapped on the bottom of your skateboard somewhere, right? That seems like a capability.
Sick.
Now, you know, you're not gonna spend $500,000, you know, to buy a golden object to throw stickers on it, right? But that's the kind of thing you might want to do, right? Your twin tiger jacket, you know, maybe it's like the equivalent of a patch, right? Like getting a badge in your jacket. So I think these things, this is kind of where it starts. And then it can go, I mean, like, I wonder what the intersection is of this with Bobo, other stuff. Like, it'd be really cool to see where they take it from here. But if, let's say, if I'm like a content creator, I know Azuki has really thought about ways in which, you know, content creators, like I've chatted lightly with, you know, with the team a bit about it because I'm a beat maker and I'm in the garden and all that, right? Yeah. And so for me personally, like as a DJ, you know, producer, someone used to make mixtapes, then release things like records and all that. Like it would be dope if, let's say, I could get some chips, right? Imagine if Azuki, like, you know, partnered up with like a vinyl pressing plant and I could press records with the PBT in it. And, you know, that's at a price point that's much more affordable than a skateboard. So I could press up like 1,000 records, you know, my next EP. Yeah, I could use, you know, my Azuki as the album art, and I could really theme it and then have this thing be a PBT. And then, yeah, sure, 1,000 people could buy it. And like, I could then, you know, spin up my own, you know, website and have sort of little fun, like engaging like campaigns and whatnot to try and like reward my fans for things. And like, you know, like just celebrate, like, you know, the loyalty, like, you know, Airport, I'll send you a record for free, a bunch of them. And you know, whatever, you could scan them, for example, and you could do things, you could earn badges, you could do things and interact in the same way that you might interact with a golden skateboard. But, you know, like as a DJ, you could do that with my record, right? And so I think that opens up a lot of fun ways. Like at the start of the chat, I said how I wasn't really feeling the shape of the traditional music industry and the kind of like gross feeling pay to play, you know, world that exists. So if you're like an indie musician, you don't have the big banks of a major label, right? Like you're finding yourself like paying like $50, $100 here, you know, pay to play. If you want to get heard, you have to sort of like shell out money, right? And if you were to invert that, it's like, well, how would I like, you know, create a sustainable business model where content creators can then sell things that maybe unfold over time, right? It's not just a one-off, like the album doesn't just, you know, like you listen to it and you kind of put it in your shelf and collect it. But if this is an object that has a chip on it that allows me to interact with it and takes on its own life, you know, then that's really interesting. Maybe there could be a secondary market. I think one big question of mine is like, I don't really understand yet how like a Web3 native secondary market will work with PBTs. You know, one interesting thing about the PBT technology is that it's really the possession of it. Like if you're in possession of it, you can then pull that signature and then do things with it, right?
Yeah. The physical object, you mean, yeah?
The physical object, right.
Yeah.
But I think that means like, I wonder what that looks like in terms of like, how would I like resell my skateboard to you, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Because it's if I have the physical object, then I'm able to basically reassign the PBT. I mean, it's a physically backed token. It's not like it's not like in, you know, ERC-721 or LIM-55, like, you know, smart contract backed token that is meant to like implicitly, you know, buy into something in real life, where if that thing gets traded and has its own life, then who knows like where the physical thing is, right? Like those things get decoupled pretty quickly. And so the interesting thing with the PBT is like whoever has a physical object can then claim it back, like they can like recall it, right? So I think what might end up happening is the physical stuff might end up floating around, circulating, reselling in the centralized sense, right? Like I might end up, if I wanted to resell the skateboard, I might end up needing to do something more like a StockX, where some like you mentioned before, like the, you know, the blend of centralized versus decentralized.
Yep.
It might be more like a traditional eBay or a StockX approach, where I'm selling the skateboard to you, you know, in meat space, as they say. And then the recipient is then claiming the PBT. Like once it's arrived on your doorstep, then you can pull out the app and then you can, you know, seize control of the PBT, indicating that you're the new owner in the garden. But it'll be interesting to see, like, I think because it is very much like a physical native token, which is the differentiator, it'll be interesting to see how they facilitate some of these like sales, secondary sales online, when it really comes down to like the possession of the physical object.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, we've seen NFTs sold at auction. You know, I can see the narrative even being stronger, right? Like selling a physical object at auction. And, you know, something that kind of stands out to me too is this idea of, you know, let's say, you know, let's use the sticker analogy, right? Let's say you're collecting stickers on your skateboard or whatever, right? Let's say there were, you know, five notable events where you could basically collect something for your skateboard if you did so-and-so thing, right? If there were, let's say, you know, only two skateboards that did all of the things, and maybe they were time gated, you can only do, you know, such and such thing within this amount of time, and only two skateboards managed to get them all, you know, would that affect the rarity, or, you know, would that reflect on the skateboard to say like, well, this one has like all five stickers, it's done all of these things, and, you know, therefore there's that record of these two specific items being rarer than the rest? Or is that how it works?
Well, I think so. I think so. You know, it's funny because before Peggy, so my co-founder Craig and I, my co-founder is amazing and I have this like wonderful relationship. So shout out Craig. He'll probably listen to this podcast.
Awesome. Hey, Craig.
We had this amazing idea. Actually, the funny thing is, I don't think I've really talked about this too much. We had this idea where, you know, before we wanted to create this marketplace for paintings that would, you know, potentially, you know, disrupt the blue chip art market, or just like people's relationship, like to make art accessible to folks, right? Finally, what we had this idea where it was like, well, how could you make a mechanism where like interacting with art was more than just like passively watching it, enjoying it, or living with it, and it could be more about like you could, you know, provably do that, right? I was coming from a world where I was thinking so much about like smart contracts, I was thinking so much about, you know, the digital like sort of blockchain DLT native concept of provenance. But then, you know, the provenance, the chain of custody of art in the art world is such a huge topic too. So how would you bridge those two, right? We had this idea where it was like, and I mentioned Foursquare before, it's like, yeah, what if you could, you know, like a proof of attendance protocol, but for art? So you could say that, yeah, I went to like this museum and I saw this like, you know, incredible piece of artwork and I checked into it and you can see my trail. Like I've built this like, you know, like breadcrumb trail of all this beautiful artwork that I've interacted with. And so I think there's an opportunity where, yeah, you could do the same kind of thing. Like you can create provenance. It's not about the sort of the owner, the appreciator who's going to all the events. I mean, proof of attendance protocol might do that, you know, like airport, you go to the one in Hong Kong, you go to one in New York, like you could have two badges, but it flips it, right? It flips it about the skateboard. So what is the skateboard done? Like how is the custodian of the skateboard, the owner that might change over time.
Yeah.
What have they done with the skateboard? And the cool thing is like, it's one thing if it's just a matter of going to like events, right? But imagine maybe the next Azuki event has a mechanism in it where maybe it's like a special, you know, event where it's $100 to get in, right? Like not everyone can pay $100, but it's $100 to get in. It's a, you know, a black tie affair. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's a charity fundraiser. And maybe part of it is seeing, you know, the Golden Dragon skateboard, that's the draw. And maybe, you know, 100 people go. So they raise $10,000 and that money gets donated to charity, right? And if the draw to that event is the golden skateboard, then it's cool. You could, there's an argument to be made that's saying, yes, like this skateboard, you know, that you now own has a badge and it was that, it was able to create $10,000 for a good cause, right? And we've already seen like Azuki, you know, generate money for causes, and that's a really important like part of what they've done. And so, you know, there's an opportunity to say like, yeah, the skateboard like has that provenance, and the provenance has done good. The provenance has generated like X dollars, you know, same as like, you know, the Sniff token, right? We've seen how like that's generated money for charity. I think there's a real opportunity to try and find ways that royalties and, you know, like dividends can be paid, you know, to charity, but now it can like, you know, bolster the provenance of the skateboard. So this skateboard may have been able to do more good for causes than another skateboard, right? It's not just about like the vanity of, you know, slapping a sticker on it. But what has this skateboard been able to do? Like, what has it been able to provably generate and give back? And so I think there's like ways to actually making it meaningful beyond just like, you know, the fun vanity of a skateboard sticker.
Yeah. No, I get that. And that is an interesting expression of provenance, right? Because it's sort of, I suppose with, you know, pieces of art, works of art, or, you know, collectibles and stuff, there can be that story or that chain of provenance, but usually it's only sort of word of mouth or sort of written down somewhere. And you don't really have it sort of etched forever on the blockchain or something like that, you know? So that is an interesting proposition.
Basically these skateboards can become like NPCs.
Yeah.
Right.
I love that. Yeah. No, that's really good.
Yeah.
And I think even just taking it, you know, a step back and sort of something that's, you know, let's say easier to transport. Like I almost see this kind of real world scavenger hunt kind of thing, you know, kind of manifesting where if you have this object that's just, you know, PBT chip enabled, beans chip enabled or whatever, and you're sort of, you know, going out and needing to, you know, go on quote unquote quests, you know, to collect, you know, your POAPs and stuff, you know, it's an interesting proposition, you know, and I think it sort of rewards people for going and doing things in real life. It'll be really cool to see, you know, how use cases can be found for that as part of the whole storytelling and sort of building out this, this universe, you know?
You know, it'd be dope.
Yeah.
Like, remember, like, so, you know, back in the day, like CryptoKitties, right? Like you could sire the CryptoKitty to make more CryptoKitties. Mm-hmm. That was kind of part of the lineage, right? It's a form of provenance, like provenance where it's like, you know, reproducing at the speed of rabbits, but it's provenance nevertheless, right?
Yep.
You know, I bet you they're going to do a thing where it's like Voltron, right? Like if you were able to take two signatures of a skateboard, like put the two together, right? Like it's like, you know, Dragon Ball Z Fusion. Right. Or, you know, shout out Naruto. It's like Jinchurikis, right? It's like nine Jinchurikis. And if you're able to go and like, let's say like at some point have two skateboards, right? Like somehow like commingle their signatures and then form two. And then additionally, like, you know, it's like, you know, it's like Akatsuki, like stealing Jinchurikis and putting them together and, you know, making the big one. Right.
Sure.
You know, if you were to take all nine golden skateboards and put them together, like, would that be the dragon? Like, is that how some at some point in the lore, like, will we manifest the dragon by putting them together? That's the kind of thing you could do if you start commingling the signatures. Right. Mm. So that might be a thing that the community is motivated to do at some point.
Right. That's insane.
And it's up to us to do that. It wouldn't be up to, like, you know, Zaga. Like they just, you know, codify it, and then it would be up to the community to find an opportunity to somehow get the nine together, right?
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Yeah. It's sort of, again, I guess, you know, creating a situation where a lot of real life interactions can be incentivized, which I think is great because, you know, having gone now to the New York event and the Hong Kong one, I think it's really something else, man, like seeing, you know, other holders and stuff. And I really hope you make it out to one of the Azuki events, you know. Did you go to the LA one?
For sure. No, I haven't been to any of them yet. No, it's like a bucket list thing at this point.
Right. Yeah, no, I totally feel that. You know, hopefully I'll see you at one of them soon. But I mean, I really do think seeing people in real life, you know, at these things and people that you've sort of gotten to know on the internet, you see them in real life and you're kind of like, oh, what's your Twitter handle? And, you know, someone says like, oh, I'm such and such. You're like, oh my God, like, that's crazy. You know, I'm Airport. What's up? And it's like, it's almost like you know these people forever, you know? I think incentivizing people to find, you know, ways to interact like that is amazing, you know, and I think sort of because it is a really sometimes Web3 feels a bit fake, a bit contrived, a bit sort of, you know, just sort of are we really here talking about flipping JPEGs or whatever, you know, but I think when you see everyone in real life, it kind of gives you that breath of holy shit, this is all super real. And I have like definitely made internet friends.
I know. I mean, we're both part of Origins NFT and like the Origins boat cruise, for example, looks super dope, right?
So yeah.
Like imagine if there was like, you know, at some point an Origins hoodie with a PBT on the sleeve and you could roll up and you could like, you know, like rub cuffs or something with whomever. And then, you know, like provably show that you guys hung out, linked up and did your thing at the boat cruise, right? Like that's the kind of thing that I think if you've got a combination of the physical object, right? The bean token. You do need some kind of app, right? And apps are currently like centralized. There's no decentralized, like, you know, like iPhone yet.
Yeah.
So you would need some kind of like, you know, Azuki Origins app that I suppose is scanning it. Probably an Azuki SDK could do that. And then, yeah, so a couple pieces would be needed, but I don't see why that couldn't be something that like anyone could do, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, at some point, like I would love to, I think that's like a real opportunity to try and see how these like PBTs interact with each other.
Yeah.
And hopefully like if the PBT is like, you know, encoded on the tag on the inside of the jacket, then that's cool for the owner. If it's on the sleeve or something, then that would be cool to like, you know, maybe create the ability for the signatures to be a little bit more loose. But one of my worries though is that like I think because it's the, you know, they talk about like the owner of the item being the one that can then like reclaim the token, right? Mm-hmm. But it's less about like the owner. It's more about like who's just physically in its presence, right?
Yeah.
So you might end up wanting to air gap the item because if anyone can just roll up, claim the token, right? Like if your cleaning lady can go and start claiming all your Twin Tigers jackets, right? Because she's like doing your laundry and like pulls the app out and starts like, you know, like claiming your PBTs. I mean, that's the thing. If you're in physical proximity to it, then that might be a challenge. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure if they're planning on doing something beyond that, where they're wrapping it and like meaning that, like the current contract and its current incantation, I think would allow anyone to just, you know, momentarily yank the PBT from you. And then you could yank it back as long as you have possession of it. But yeah, I think it seems like right now then I would probably be squirreling away my jacket, like yeah. my treasure or something, right? You know, I'd be putting it somewhere safe so that no one's going to go and just like use my signature to yank the PBT. So yeah, that might be like a challenge. Like I think they might want to be thinking about ways of like letting you wear the jacket with the tag, maybe even put it on the sleeve, let people scan it, like, you know, like you know how people were bumping their phones for a minute, or like Foursquare checking in, like mm-hmm. make the signature a little more loose, so there's like an aspect of it where it's okay to like you're encouraged to have people interact with it, and it's not just about like a hard like PBT ownership transfer, right?
Yeah. Do you think it'd be possible to sort of, you know, demarcate the use cases? So for example, you know, let's say with an article of clothing, like a hoodie, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Let's, you know, you're not really looking to, I guess, resell a hoodie, you know, that has maybe 20,000 units or something, you know, or even more, let's say, right? Like a mass production kind of thing. You may wish to buy one and leave it unscanned for whatever reason, you know, but sort of, you know, would there be a possibility to sort of say, you know, you buy an item of clothing like that, you scan it one time, the first time you scan it proves ownership, and then every subsequent scan is only for, you know, the interactions you described, like say like rubbing cuffs or sort of, you know, like when you meet other people, almost like signing sure. for a POAP kind of thing, or creating some kind of interaction on an app, you know, would that be possible?
Yeah, I think it kind of comes down to like maybe the value that you ascribe to it. Like maybe the first scan will always be special. Like you'll never forget your first scan or something, right? where the first scan will always be like, you know, the one where like only you could have ever done that first scan. And maybe the subsequent scans, like maybe they're not treated with the same, like maybe we don't ascribe the same value to the, you know, the nth scan that we do the first one. So yeah, that could certainly be a thing for sure. Or they could always like, you know, amend the protocol. They can make different functions or like, you know, like with domain names, right? Like domain names, you require a code. I don't think back in the day when domain names came out, I don't think there was like all these transfer mechanisms with codes and emails like you have now. I think it was more just like, you know, don't get hacked.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised if they amended the protocol or something, or like, you know, shipped a revision to it that was backwards compatible. I mean, the current interface is like pretty minimal. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot they could do beyond that if they wanted to make like some kind of secure transfer function or lock it up or whatever. So, you know, Azuki's no stranger to publishing like awesome contract interfaces. So
yeah,
this could just be the first slice of it. I mean, the chip itself has all like, there's like, I don't know, infinite things you can do once you've got that like asymmetric key like baked into some physical good. So
yeah,
they'll probably just create additional versions of the contract with more capabilities, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, that makes tons of sense. And I guess, you know, the takeaway really is that, you know, what they have right now is fit for purpose for the skateboards, right? And I think any future implementations, obviously, because it's now open source, you know, others can sort of take that and sort of amend it as needed for whatever drops they want to make. But at the same time, you know, Azuki isn't limited either. You know, if they want to do a drop that sort of has different, you know, functions or different sort of applications, then they can also amend their own code and sort of, you know, drop a token that makes sense for whatever it is they're putting out, right?
100%. I mean, the thing that's gonna make it like fun and interesting is like not the capabilities of the contract. I mean, the capabilities of the contract have to like just be enough to serve the bigger purpose, which we know to be like, you know, the storytelling product, right? And so I think they're probably focusing more on that aspect of it. And yeah, the fact that they've got like, you know, asymmetric key on the bean chip is like, that's huge, right? That's all you need. And if the contract itself is thin, that's cool. Yeah, that's fine. Like, I'm super stoked. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, no, your excitement is I feel it too. And to be honest, like, again, I was kind of reading through it and I'm like, this is super cool. And I, you know, kind of had this like idea of what that might look like, but I think after this conversation, like, I definitely am more, you know, the gears are spinning a little bit faster, and I'm sort of like, ah, cool, like, you know, I'm starting to understand like what this can all mean. And I think, you know, it's hard because I think a lot of people also have sort of been like, yeah, you know, it's just an NFC chip, you know, we've seen this before kind of thing. But I guess understanding it from the tech perspective of like, you know, what it really brings to the table, how it changes the game, I think that's really helpful to sort of, you know, get some perspective on. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Hell yeah. I do want to touch on one thing, because I think this is, and this is maybe taking a step away and might link in with the PBT stuff, but, you know, we've talked since sort of the very early days of knowing each other about music NFTs and sort of how those are going. Mm-hmm. And you kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, you've thought about it too. Where do you think we're at in that state? Because I'm always curious, you know, the creator's perspective, because if I'm being completely honest with you, you know, I think that we're so early in NFTs, and I don't really think we've reached, you know, anywhere close to maturity in the market. And I think with music NFTs in particular, it's always one of those things where I'm a little bit like, it's very gray area for me. You know, I can understand owning a JPEG, but owning a song is very different, you know. And I think we've seen different expressions, but what are your thoughts on, you know, where we're at now and where you want to see us go?
Great question. Well, I think we are extremely early, mm-hmm. like earlier in the music side of things than other ones. And I think there's, my hypothesis is that I think we're early because the music industry is broken in that, you know, like everyone knows that it's not always the artists and the content creators' best interests that are being served in the traditional industry. And there's a ton of intermediaries. You can't always bypass them, and they all want their cut. And usually it's like the artist that eats last. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, you know, like I won't get into what, you know, how the industry was created, but it's like, I don't know, maybe you could say it's predatory in a sense. It's certainly not like if I was to greenfield it today, I wouldn't want to put it together that way, you know, from first principles. But there are a lot of centralized entities that are kind of inextricable. And I think they hold a lot of power, and they may continue to hold a lot of power. And that makes innovation really difficult. Like, trust me, if there was a way that I could go and like turn it upside down and do a judo flip on the music industry using some kind of protocol that I could create, like I'd be the first person to do it. Mm-hmm. Cause no one loves protocols or music more than me. However, you know, you get things like think about it, right? Like you get, there's very much a winner takes all mentality in the music industry and in other, like, you know, arts industries. You know, Spotify is like probably by and large the largest place, central place where music is consumed. And then you got a couple other big ones too, right? Like, I don't know, whatever, Apple Music, YouTube, other ones, other DSPs where, you know, people are consuming the music. But that's pretty much where you're going, right? And I think the average person, they just want to hear their song. Like as a DJ, I know that it's like, you know, I can play all sorts of music that I want to hear, but that's not going to make me a good DJ. Like I got to play music that other people want to hear, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
It's about like, you know, pleasing others, and people just want to have a good time. They want to listen to music. They don't want to overthink, like, you know, the process of it. They want to open Spotify. They're in a hurry. They're driving. They're doing their laundry. They want to just like play their song and do their thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's going to change. And meanwhile, so Spotify, like they control all the metrics and all the data around like streams and this and that. People have thought about ways that they can create, you know, DLTs to try and like break that up and like then create royalties and create like out of transparency and payments and things that we crave. But I'm not exactly sure, like, if you're going to be building that upon like a Spotify API, then as far as I'm concerned, like it's like centralization all the way down. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And it's not like there's like a decentralized audio player as, you know, convenient as Spotify, where you can stream directly off IPFS. And if there's a microtransaction on L2, that's like breaking off, you know, a fraction of like one Satoshi royalty for every stream to the artist. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're there yet. I think that will be some time before we get there. I think we will, but we're going to need like, you know, an L2 on top of L2 or something. It's going to have to be like super, super micro and then more convenient than Spotify in order for that to hit critical mass and really like get product market fit so that people are wanting to use it.
Yep.
So I think that's a big thing. There are, I think when you think about like the, like funding the content creation though, like, there's ways that like there's platforms where, you know, like it's like the Kickstarter of songs. So you can help, you know, crowdfund like a project or an artist and pay them directly, which I think is great. You know, those things do exist in the centralized world as well. So I don't know if like the decentralized option is that much more compelling. In fact, if you think about it, like using a credit card is like infinitely more convenient than like, I don't know, funding a wallet, transferring,
yeah,
like, confirm. Like it's a pain in the butt, right?
Yeah.
Compared to like the credit card infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And if I'm funding a, like, you know, a song that I want, it's not like I'm going to go like, you know, do a chargeback on my favorite artist, right? So yeah. It's not like there's like a reversible risk for them. So these things might get solved eventually, but if I wanted to do these things, I would just go to Bandcamp and buy directly from the artist and I can do all those things. So
yeah.
I think it's not like a super, super compelling use case yet, but I think we can get there. And I think things PBTs, like things that are like truly differentiators that could not happen in the Web2 definition of the music industry. I think that will be the way to then like cross the chasm into where we want to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think as long as there's like a more convenient, more efficient, faster way to do things in a centralized sense, it's going to be hard to topple that just for the sake of decentralization.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's sort of the biggest hurdle for a lot of things, right? So what I'm hearing is, that I think eventually if we, and this is, I think, a gross oversimplification of what you're saying, but, for the sake of illustration, like, I think, effectively you're saying if the infrastructure for music in a decentralized platform was as robust as something like Spotify, for artists to use and also for listeners, yeah. right? Then that would basically create a situation where we would be able to, listen to music by, all creators and, our favorite creators included and people that we may discover. And we might, be able to sort of buy musical NFTs that are sort of a part of this platform that are kind of weaved in, and the artists will automatically get paid a royalty as a portion of that. Right. But if for mm-hmm. all intents and purposes, we're looking at a sort of Spotify like platform, but Web3 and decentralized. Right.
Yeah. And I think this analogy also like goes beyond music to, like we've talked online, we've chatted about like digital collectibles, like skins, yep. right.
Mm-hmm.
Like loot. And I think the exact same analogy applies to that too, because for music, you've got Spotify, you've got like Steam, PSN, you've got lots of different like, closed ecosystems for games.
Yeah.
And people are certainly making inroads in this, but you would think that like, if I was a game, like a game studio, and I'm already using like the SDKs that are provided by the platform, like if it's like a PlayStation SDK or, if I'm using like Steam's infrastructure, you would think that we would see more proliferation around like loot and skins, having like more interoperability, let's say on the Steam network, right?
Yeah.
Like in the purely centralized way with like a centralized SDK and like well-funded, well-capitalized like companies with like super smart people, like why can't that skin already, proliferate throughout the Steam ecosystem?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of my perspectives is like if you can't already do it in the centralized, I mean, if it seems easy to do in the centralized world, but we're not doing it, then not to say that maybe it's more interesting to do it in the decentralized world, but you think yeah. that we would at least have like more adoption in the centralized world, and then the decentralized thing just makes it better, right?
You want to hear my cynical take on that?
Yeah.
So I think it's greed. I really think it's just greed. I think it's, companies can get away with making a skin that makes sense for only one game. And yeah. there's no real incentive for them to take it over to another game, right? Because I sort of feel like if people start anew, the business model is such that you play these games, they're free to play, they onboard a lot of people, and they're going to be, whales that sort of go up and buy tons of skins if they really like the game. Mm-hmm. And that alone generates so much revenue, So there's not really an incentive, I feel like, to have carryover skins where, let's say you spent like $800 on skins in Valorant, right? And then they make a new game and all of a sudden your skins can carry over. It's like you have a bunch of cosmetics that you effectively, you got a bonus for nothing, in their eyes, right? Yeah. And that's the cynical view. But, I really do think that from a business perspective, there's no incentive yet. And I think this is kind of true for, all these things. We're talking about like a Web3 Spotify, if we're talking about like interoperability of skins. I've shared this opinion with Omega, we were chatting about this just the other day, but we were talking about, at what point is the narrative going to flip and are we going to see all of these use cases sort of swap over? And I really do believe that it's going to be a point where, it's so successful, someone comes and does a proof of concept that makes sense, and then people demand that to be the new standard, And I think we saw this in video games in particular with free to play. There was an era where no games were free to play. Every game was sort of, at least $30. We're talking maybe like, $60 for, a decent game that was like a multiplayer game. I mean, Call of Duty for the longest time, right, was like $60. And then you had cosmetics in the game that you could pay for on top of that, yeah. And that was the model for the longest time. But, we've seen the success of free-to-play games. I think League of Legends was one of the first that really kicked us off. And they were like, we're going freemium. You can pay for more heroes. You can pay for skins. But there is a way to play the game entirely for free. and your experience is not technically worse, you know, you have less options, but you can still, for all intents and purposes, play the game. You're not at disadvantage. And I think that then became, you know, the standard model for games now, where when you see multiplayer games, they're almost always released free to play, right? And because they want that big audience base, but they make so much money off the skins, you know? And I think it's, it might be the same, you know, where we start to see someone do it right and create such a strong value proposition that other, you know, other creators just basically have to keep up. They have to do it
for sure. Yeah. And the current model, I mean, look, you know, gamers are frustrated too. Mm-hmm. Like, we see through it, right? Like, we know what's going on, and like we begrudgingly do it, and we grind, and then we're frustrated. Like, it's not like it's not a great customer experience. It doesn't like create loyalty. But I mean, maybe tying it back to the earlier convo, right? Like, imagine a world in which, you know, the game studios get in bed with the clothing manufacturers, and then they use a methodology like PBT, for example, where if you own the hoodie, right, or you own the item physically, like, they sell it to you, and they'd probably sell it to you for way more than $5. Mm-hmm. It's like, now it's like $100 like pair of kicks, and you're really wearing it and you're scanning it. But then that the owner of the kicks, like, that could then be, you know, like ported into the game. So there might be an interesting way where, like, instead of just selling you on virtual goods, like, you're literally like, you're required to like line your closet in order to keep your like virtual wardrobe, you know, like tricked out. Right. So, and if that had some level of interop, that would be like super cool. Cause it's like, it's one thing to have these things exist in the digital realm. That's cool, but not for everyone. But if they also, you know, were things that you could wear like IRL and had like a digital presence with some interop through different, like, through a standard or some SDKs that were adopted in different games. Like, to me, that sounds like a resoundingly amazing thing for everyone, because we all want to, like, you know, we're all buying clothes, right? If those, and we're all playing games, and we all want to look fly, and we have like our own, like, you know, like egos and identities and these things wrapped up in it. And so there's an opportunity where all of these things converge, and actually it is the same everywhere. And it's not like you have like, I mean, you might have a digital persona, but you might have an IRL persona. But there's now opportunities for those things to then like intersect. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe one day, like, you know, your Call of Duty wardrobe is like physically, like, you know, sitting behind you, right? And that's what you're wearing in the game. So casually you dress up every day and you put that on.
A ghillie suit on just hanging behind you, you know, kind of. No, and you know, it's funny because you're making me think that actually, I've just realized, you know, we actually do have an expression of that now, you know, in video games that just maybe isn't getting enough attention in this conversation. But, you know, with Nintendo, they sort of have those little figurines, right? And they have basically this contactless thing where for a lot of games that are in the Nintendo ecosystem, you can actually use those little figurines and like tap them on your screen, and you'll get an in-game item as a result of sort of having those figurines. So a lot of people buy, you know, full sets or just pick one up whenever they see them, kind of thing, because, you know, on top of having the physical collectible, they also get the thing, you know, in game and stuff. And I remember I actually bought one specifically for Fire Emblem. I was playing Fire Emblem, and they're like, "Yeah, you can unlock, you know, like additional characters and stuff." And I was like, "Yo, dope! That's awesome! Like, you have me, right? Like, I'm super down." So I went and copped a couple. So maybe that is the first sort of expression of it we've seen. You know, I think, has it been super successful? Maybe not. You know, I sort of feel like we need to really break into PC gaming probably, and sort of, you know, some really crazy titles that sort of really enhance the experience and bring out the collector in people. But there is an expression, so it's interesting you say that, because that really could be it, you know.
Yeah And I think the cost to rolling that out becomes very incremental. Like, I don't think these chips will be more than, you know, what, like 5 cents, 10 cents to manufacture at scale, like, or less.
Yeah,
right? Like, it's not like these things are not like the chips are expensive to create, unless there's some kind of, like, you know, wild licensing fee on top of it. But yeah, the chips should be, I think eventually, like, you know, in our lifetime, everything we buy will be chipped and will have some kind of like implication through some form, even if it's just like, you know, like AirTags, but like everything you've got has like some, you know, the micro equivalent of an AirTag like baked into it, because it's just going to become like, so, like, the upside of doing that, I think, for the consumer, like, they're going to want it, they're going to expect it, and you're going to have your phone in your pocket, which might end up indexing like everything you own, right? Mm-hmm. And then the cost of adding like you know, the 1 cent, like 5 cent chip on everything is just like incremental, but the value is huge. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point in our life that became like sort of the trend.
Yeah. No, I feel that. And dude, it's really, you know, sort of, I love the way you frame it because it really makes us feel like we're watching history unfold before our very eyes.
Yeah, for sure, man. Special time for sure.
Yeah. No, and I think it's great just hearing it from the tech perspective too, because again, I think it gives a different level of understanding and perspective to, you know, what's possible. And I think it's fascinating, right? Because again, with my background, you know, I don't really look at the tech side of it. I sort of think about, you know, I guess the commercial side, the product side and that sort of thing, but not really so much the implications of the technology. And I think, you know, again, having that broken down is really great. So yeah, super happy, man. I think this was a wonderful conversation. And this was probably the fastest one in recent memory, I think, for, you know, I can't believe we're already at an hour. You know, it sort of flew by.
Yeah. No, time flies by, but yeah, no, I appreciate it. I mean, like, I think for me, I'm always like, I'm, you know, full-time CTO, more than full-time. I'm hacking on stuff at night and, you know, jamming with like folks like you and keep my ear to the streets on like, you know, where technology is headed. And, you know, I'm always looking at like new stuff coming out and it's always like, well, you know, is this like a gimmick or a game changer? It's kind of like a mental model that I often refer to. It's like, in certain things, like at first, I, you know, NFTs were around for a minute and I wasn't participating in it because I think in my mind I was like, yeah, you know, it's kind of a gimmick, right?
Same.
Yeah. And then it took me a minute and then I was all in. As you know, sometimes it's like you jump head first and you're like, yep, okay, there's something here for sure. Don't know what it is yet, but there's something here for sure. Probably still gimmicky, but at least it's a fun gimmick and, you know, yeah, like I'll enjoy this. But now it definitely feels like with stuff like, you know, PPT and some of the protocols that are coming out and just like the way that things are heading, yeah, it's like trending towards the game. The aspects of it are coming out, you know, in the game changer side of things. And even though it's a bear market, I think if you can still keep your ear to the streets, if you can stay motivated to like pay attention to the good stuff that's coming out, there's a lot of innovations that happen in, you know, in the bear markets. Hopefully those with ideas are well capitalized and hopefully, like, you know, they've been able to manage the treasury responsibly and, you know, can still like, you know, pay the cost, you know, help people like hire the right talent and grow the idea so that stuff can come to market, even when times are tough. But yeah, I think it's gonna be an interesting year. And I think if we can do a good job of building some like cool game changing technologies, you know, when things are quiet and we can focus, then we'll be able to ride the wave back. Like next time, like, you know, the bull market swings back around, if we've got like some really cool tech in our pocket and that in its retail already, then I think we'll be well equipped to like ride the wave and not just, you know, ride the wave as like, you know, folks who are in it before, but like come up with really cool things that people want to be a part of and like, you know, have people spin up those Coinbase accounts and like, you know, kick the tires on things and create their first wallet, buy their first PBT, you know, sign their first transaction. And like that's what it's going to take in order for this thing to keep growing. And so otherwise, if we just keep like navel gazing and doing things that aren't that interesting on a retail level, like to most people, then yeah, you know, it'll still be cool for people like us who are maybe early adopters, but this is like the time for us to like buckle down, build cool shit, and then like get it ready for when the markets like return. And then there's like a big, you know, surge of interest back into crypto.
I totally agree. Yeah. And, you know, I love that Azuki sort of leading the charge on that because, you know, I've had this thought for a little while, but I actually said this to Z when he was in Hong Kong, you know, just the other day. But I sort of mentioned, you know, I appreciate that, you know, the Azuki team and especially, you know, Z, I guess, being sort of, you know, the sort of the face of it all, you know, to some extent. You know, I think him being someone who's quite passionate about the tech and the potential of Web3, you know, I like that because I think the culture in this space is inevitably and intrinsically linked to tech. You know, you can't really have culture on sort of blockchain products or Ethereum or sort of anything Web3 without that really deep sort of rooting in tech. Mm-hmm. And I do sort of feel like a lot of projects that come through, you know, not naming names and you know, I really don't even have a project in mind, but I sort of feel like, you know, there's this idea of culture and people talk about streetwear and all these types of things, but I think they're either, you know, one or the other, right? It's either very tech heavy or it's very much into, you know, this Web 2 concept or this Web 2 understanding of these types of things. But really, we haven't seen that gap being bridged by any other project quite yet, really. And I think, you know, Azuki sort of coming out with these tech solutions like ERC-721A, like we'll make it better for all you DGens kind of thing, save some gas. And then now this PBT thing to sort of be like, well, you know, this is the next big thing. You know, this is the best implementation of this technology. I just feel like it's something that sort of, you know, is... it's paving the way for a lot more game-changing things to happen.
Agreed.
Yeah. Before we close off, I do have one other question, which is totally unrelated to anything else. But this is actually something that I've always thought about with you, because I respect a lot, you know, sort of how you manage your time, because obviously you're a very busy person. You have a family, you know, wear many hats. So what sort of how do you conceptualize time management, and sort of how do you compartmentalize things such that you're able to juggle all the things that you're sort of, you know, actively managing?
Yeah, that's a great question.
The answer is you don't.
I don't know.
No.
Well, there must be an answer. We can unpack it together. So I think I've found myself, I think when I've looked back on my life, and like there's times when I've maybe thought about the times I was like the happiest. I think the times when I was happiest were the times when I was the busiest, mm-hmm. but busy on like a number of like well-rounded fronts, right? I think there's times in my life when I was like maybe the unhappiest, because I was grinding like 14 hours, 12 hours a day, like just going like, you know, like building stuff, building companies, scaling things, and like not taking care of my bigger well-being. And then other times when I was like mad busy because I was doing a ton of things, and I was like, yeah, of course, like building, you know, coding, building companies and things. Also like making beats, DJing, like, you know, like I would look back on like a weekend that left me feeling recharged. And for me, it would be like, yeah, like, you know, like Friday, like had a good week at work, right? Like left work feeling like, yeah, like sure, tired, but we killed it this week. We did something, knocked out of the park, got that release out, like nailed the demo, whatever, right? Close the fundraising round. Then I would be like, you know, off, I'd race home, you know, scarf down some chili or something, and then go out and I'd be DJing to like 4 a.m. Okay.
Amazing.
And then I get home and I've got like a kid wants pancakes. And so this is like a really like, you know, it sounds like a nightmare, right? I'm getting blown all around. But I think, you know, then I might, if I find like some time for myself, do something, maybe like a workout or something, you know, maybe like make some music, spend time with my wife, or like go to a restaurant. Like, a good weekend to me would be like a very busy one, but one that was like touching on all the things, right? Mm-hmm. And if I was able to like feel well-rounded, then that would leave me feeling physically tired, but like very spiritually recharged and like feeling whole. And so I think I kind of look at it like that. Like, I think people might wonder why I'm still doing music. Like, I'm not like 19 anymore. I'm not like, you know, it's like, why are you still like thinking that you're a dad, you're like a founder, this and that, you're like where do you have time to like, you know, be entering like NFT like whitelist contests, and like where do you find the time to like be making music, right? But you know, yeah, it's all about just finding those little pockets in the day. I think becoming a dad was something that taught me like it requires you to become efficient, you know, whether it's like you want to go like work on something, you've got like 40 minutes till the baby's waking up, you know, but you want to get that song over the line and like share it or something. So you got 40 minutes. You got to sit down and like do the right work, right? Like, you know, all killer, no filler, sit down and do it in 40 minutes. And then you've got to move on. Right. Or whatever it is. It's like you end up like sort of slicing your day more efficiently. And I think that's been a big thing. It's like growing older, you know, like not being able to pull all nighters anymore. And on the flip side, having like, you know, a human alarm clock that's like running into my room and like asking for pancakes if I've been up to 4 a.m, like they don't care. Like, I got to make those pancakes. It's happening. Yep. Right. So, yeah. So it becomes like a lot about discipline and about sort of time management. But I've been striving to do that in a way where I don't have to quit like my creative pursuits, or, you know, I've been able to like, you know, maintain like an interesting career by, you know, being a founder and taking calculated risks there. And yeah, so it's, you know, got to be a good husband, partner for people, got to be a good friend, got to give other people time, right? So it's a bit of everything. No silver bullet, but you know, I think like I admire you because I know that you've done a lot of like stuff to take care of yourself physically, and you're very like interested in sort of like health and quantified self and things like that. And so that's an area, like my birthday was yesterday. I'm thinking about how I want, like, I'm 41 now, right? So like my body is not as resilient as it used to be. Like sometimes I'm like walking around like an old man, like I'm like, you know, like I should be doing yoga probably. I'm like feeling stiff. So I'm thinking about, you know, I got this other, like I got a daughter coming soon. Like, you know, who do I want to be role modeling for my kids as they start thinking about what they're seeing and how they remember me, you know, in their young age. And yeah, I want them to see someone who, you know, is like unafraid to try starting companies and like building up wild ideas, but it's also creative, making music, right? Like doing things that are, you know, for the love and for the community, but then maybe the place where I need to improve on is like, yeah, I got to be disciplined to just stay in shape, you know, like take care of that physical body, because I think we all live in this like metaverse in our minds and on Discords and on Twitter. And I think it's easy to let the body decay because we're so like, like our virtual lives are so gamified and we're so motivated to like hop online and there's all these like, you know, like dopamine generating like things happening in our notification feed all day. And then for me, it's like my physical self ends up failing, but without maintaining that machine, right? Like, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to like maintain this like obsession with just like all this cool stuff happening in our world. And I want to be around for my kids and I want to be around to see all things become PBTs. And so, yeah, like the flip side of that is like, I got to maybe switch off and do a better job of like fueling the machine sometimes.
No, I get that. And I appreciate what you're saying. You know, I think that, you know, it is a big part of it. And sort of, you know, I've heard stories of people who, you know, pull wild hours in this space. Actually, Sneaky is notorious for this. You know, Sneaky Ninja Pants. He sort of apparently, you know, when he's sort of trading in the height of the bull run, will stay awake for 2.5-3 days at a time and then just take 18 hours off NFTs and sort of like, you know, sleep and then come back and hit it again. And I'm just like, wow, you know, I can't imagine doing that myself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like you come from a background where, you know, I'm sure you work like, you know, like long hours and like my wife's a nurse, so she's working 12 hour shifts. I think like different strokes for different folks. I think the days of like punching a clock 9 to 5 hopefully are like, I think the pandemic has accelerated, obviously like work from home and things, but I think also maybe it's starting to change like people's relationship with like, you know, feeling like they need to, you know, wake up, commute from the suburbs, you know, into an office, punch the clock 9 to 5, drive back, like have a certain like more rigid schedule. So yeah, like, you know, night owls can do their thing. If you know, like, you know, grinding for 2 days is, you know, like if that's what you need to do to get, you know, like to do an excellent work, then I totally get it. And I think some of these things are becoming like more fluid and flexible too. So I think the most important thing is just, you know, do what you got to do and don't feel guilty about it. Just try and be healthy and responsible. But, you know, yeah, if that works for Sneaky, I mean, obviously, like whatever Sneaky's doing is like, you know, working, right? So, so keep it up is what I would say.
I love it. I love the positivity. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's up to everyone and sort of how you feel at the end of the day and sort of what works for you. So I love it. That's a beautiful message, my man.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Tell people real quick where they can find you, socials and sort
of... yes well, my Twitter ended up like, I don't know what happened, but
that was the saddest thing, by the way.
I was MXU Beats on Twitter. I had like, I don't know, like content and all that from my sampling community and then also like my music and this and that, and then for some reason it got like suspended for violating, maybe it was too dope for Twitter and they couldn't handle it, but I had to restart it. So now I'm on Twitter MXU NFT, I'm on Instagram MXU Beats, on YouTube as well. I think, you know, for my music stuff, which I think is probably, if you're into that stuff, then it's probably like more interesting than maybe more passive on the NFT side, but yeah, MXU Beats on IG and on YouTube, you can see, you know, who I am and what I do with my equipment and my music and that. I'm on Spotify. You can find me as MXU, and I've got a couple albums up there, more dropping soon. And yeah, I'd encourage you to check out Peggy.com, my startup. We're super stoked. We're launching, we're kind of launching in stealth. And so hopefully be able to share some invite codes with the Airport Lounge community soon. And
hell yeah.
You can hop in and enjoy some cool art and see what's going on there. And it's super early days. But yeah, hopefully one day we'll be a thriving open sea for paintings. And, you know, like I think a lot of people in the Web3 space obviously, you know, appreciate the aesthetics of the art. They appreciate the liquidity. They want to be able to, you know, purchase things that they identify with and they can enjoy, feel proud of, but then also, you know, rehome those NFTs. And so I think like a lot of the mentalities that make people just love NFTs, I think will translate to why they will love fine art. And yeah, I've got, you know, Azuki and a Moonbird and things, but I also live with art. I've got like some paintings in my house. I, you know, eat my breakfast underneath some paintings that were created by some, you know, inspiring individuals. Not Basquiat's Warhols or Picasso's or anything, but other, you know, emerging contemporary artists. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of overlap. And if folks in the NFT space have not thought yet about living with art, that's a thing that I would encourage you to check out, because it's like you can have both, right? You can have a thriving NFT portfolio and you can also, you know, fill your home or apartment or condo or bedroom full of paintings that inspire you just the way your NFTs do. So think about it and check out Peggy.com.
I love it. Wow, that's the most amazing readout I've ever heard. That's incredible. Listen, MXU, Adam, thank you so much for your time. I hope to have you back because I think there's a lot of things that we could talk about. You know, we didn't touch on royalty so much. I do want to talk more about music and stuff. And so, you know, we'll definitely have you back. But thank you for making the time.
100%. Thanks, brother. Much appreciated.